Hey y'all, it's Jasmine.
Hey, it's Isabella.
Hey, it's Yelena.
It's Nicola.
It's Bella.
And Ben.
And we are back with another episode from Voice of Youth from your favorite digital media platform, Youth Tellers.
We're the youth giving you the truth, engaging in worldwide conversations centered around social impact, media, and arts.
We are really excited to bring you monthly episodes featuring our favorite subject matter, conversations, and interviews with some of the industry's best.
This month, we'll be discussing innovative ideas on local journalism in the U.S. and what you can do to help.
This is the Voice of Youth, and we are rolling in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back, Youth Tellers, to another episode. Today, Ben will be talking about all things journalism, but before we do so, let's talk about some current events. First things first, Met Gala. Yes, we not only saw one cat, but three cats. Jared Leto cat, Doja Cat, and Lil Nas X cat. The theme of this year was in memory of Karl Lagerfeld, whose signature mascot was the white cat. And personally, I think all of these look slayed and paid a respectful homage to that. Hopefully one day, Youth Tellers will do something in regards to the Met Gala. All Met Gala looks were iconic as always, and so is the Mario Bros. Movie, which has become the top grossing movie of the year, expected to bring in $1 billion just through box office. No wait, I'm reading that actually it just surpassed the global box office receipts on Sunday, breaking records and making this film historic. That's just crazy. Was the Mario movie nostalgic to you, and have you seen Mario in theaters? Let us know. Now I'm going to send you over to Yelena, who's going to talk about some artistic inspiration. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Angela, and everyone else that is listening our podcast. For this month's inspiration, I want to talk about artist who is pretty famous as a lead singer of Panic at the Disco, Brandon Urie. I've been following him for a while now, but the reason I want to mention him now is because of his choice to stop his music career so he can properly spend his time with his wife and soon-to-be-born child. It showed me that sometimes we change our values even though we never expected it. His work will stay even after him, and his songs helped me a lot. You can find them on YouTube. And now I'll pass it along to Ben for our main event as he discusses journalism and its effects on our culture.
Hey everyone, this is Ben. In our past episodes, we've done interviews and panel discussions. This week, instead of doing an interview or panel discussion, I'll be talking about my thoughts on journalism. We'll go over how I found journalism, what local journalism looks like, and how it works through the perspective of systems thinking, as well as perspectives you can use as a reader. I'll also discuss ideas on what the news of the future could look like, what people are already changing, and what you can do to make things better. My interest in journalism started with global politics. I wanted to know how the world worked. I listened to NPR before school for a while. This was back when the war in Syria was going on, and after a few weeks, I couldn't listen anymore because I was so stressed. It was the same breaking news about something I couldn't do anything about. A few years later, I was really interested in county government in my area. I attended public meetings, and sometimes I need to look through government documents to make educated public comments and understand the discussions that were happening in the meeting. I was doing research on a recent set of reforms in child welfare services. It was a big list of recommendations and solutions from experts and the community that were developed for over a year. I found that it was started by an expose in my city's newspaper. It was an expose that was so shocking it spurred an entire set of reforms that had potential to improve the quality of life for a lot of people. And that's when I realized how important these stories were. But life was a bit too hectic to try and follow the stories. In 2021, I tried getting back into staying with current events during my spare time. I was reading BBC News, Vice, and Vox. After about 6 months, I just couldn't anymore. I was frustrated with a lot of stories that presented a problem but didn't give clear information on what to do to help. These were stories that were about things happening to foster kids and immigrants in the healthcare system that people were very outraged about, and these events were really a symptom of a greater problem in the healthcare system that everyone was experiencing. And it was frustrating to not see this root cause acknowledged. It got me thinking about potential solutions for it. At one point, I thought about starting my own organization. I took an introductory college course on journalism. I spent the next year writing and sharing my ideas for social change, eventually encountering a method of thought called systems thinking, which I found could be used to organize my current ideas and develop future ideas. It's a method to analyze problems in the world in order to change them. You do it by identifying what kind of system it is, how it works, and what all the different parts of the systems are, using what's called stocks, flows, and feedback loops. When you think about systemic change, that's what systems thinking is about. As an example, if you're trying to figure out how to solve the healthcare system in the US, you'd have to think about the different stocks or parts. Hospitals, doctors, patients, insurance coverage. Think about all the feedback loops, like keeping beds filled, insurance denying coverage to save money, and what relationships could be changed to solve the problem. Universal healthcare coverage, improving working conditions for doctors. Do I believe that this is the solution to our world's problems? Yes. But today, we'll be talking about journalism, the messenger of our world's problems, and I'll apply some of the concepts of systems thinking to that. Let's dive into journalism, specifically local news in the United States. I'm not talking about clickbait, I'm talking about real news, reporting that holds those in power accountable by sharing the truth with the public. Who writes these stories? Often, it's local newspapers. I'm going to try and get your thoughts going by thinking about the stocks, flows, and feedback loops of local news. Stocks are like nouns, people, places, and things. Local news is usually written articles you'll find in newspapers or on news websites. These articles may include quotes from sources, detailed information about local events, and investigative reporting. This is different from television news, which is made up of video clips, soundbites, and anchor commentary. There's a focus on breaking news and sensational stories that capture viewers' attention. Stocks can be newspapers, journalists, and readers. Stocks can also be levels of accessibility of local news to communities that don't have access to internet, are disabled, or are short on time due to long working hours. It can be levels of trust the audience has, whether people see local news as entertainment or a source of information. Availability of journalism jobs, as well as job satisfaction, levels of experience, audiences' knowledge on topics that are being written. Flows are changes in stocks. Think about how stocks move, increase, decrease, or change. Flow can be how many people are reading or watching the news during the year, and how much or often they interact. There can also be flows like changes in advertising revenue or subscriptions, and an increase or decrease of funding coming in to keep the paper running. Local papers only make up 25% of the country's media outlets, but they produce almost half of all original reporting. The flow is changing. With the rise of the internet, they've been going out of business. A lot of people don't read the newspaper. They get their news online for free. Sites like Reddit are really interesting because people who have been affected by particular events often make comments, and you can ask them questions directly, assuming they're not a troll. Feedback loops are about how stocks are managed. These are things people do to change the stocks and flows. Feedback loops can be positive, like when readers give praise or criticism, which helps journalists improve the quality and relevance of their reporting. As more people give input, journalists are more likely to produce content that resonates with the community, which then increases how much people read. Feedback loops can also be negative, like when people click on controversial news stories out of anger. So more controversial stories get written because it gets the most views, so more negativity gets published. Other feedback loops that happen are when journalists gain credibility by writing great work. The more they develop this reputation, the more the audience trusts them and follows their work. Another is when reporting shapes public discussions and government decisions, and this draws people to pay attention to local news, which then leads to more news reports on important issues and leads to more people paying attention. An example of this is like how I became interested in local journalism after finding out the expose sparked reforms. Now we're going to switch gears and talk about system traps. In systems thinking, you have what are called system traps, which are common ways systems fall apart. For example, a news outlet might cut costs by reducing staff, which can lead to lower quality reporting, which causes people to stop reading, making the downward spiral of financial problems worse. For example, in 2018, the Cleveland Plain Dealer laid off a third of its newsroom staff, resulting in reduced coverage and a lot less trust and engagement from its audience. Another system trap is called success to the successful. It can be found where Facebook and Google have taken over the market when it comes to news, shutting down existing local news groups and making it difficult for new ones to compete. Laws created in the early stages of the internet made Google and Facebook excused from having to follow libel laws, which protect people from false statements or hate speech that can harm them. This allowed the spread and profit from fake news, and the wealth they have gained from that, they have used to prevent legal reforms to stop it. With all these changes in stocks and flows, news organizations have been making their own feedback loops. A lot of organizations have tried moving physical papers to online websites to keep up, but the money they would normally make from ads is a lot less since Google and Facebook charge a big percentage of the money they get from ads. Some news sites use subscription services to support themselves. You may have encountered this when you click on a news link and it asks you for a subscription, but for a lot of people who can't afford their own bills, subscriptions aren't something they can sign up for no matter how much they want to. Original reporting just isn't profitable like it used to be. Some journalists have caught on and started news organizations as nonprofits, where they rely on donations from readers and grants instead of charging readers individually. As organizations are changing what they do, they are changing how they do it. The digital era has allowed journalists to reach audiences and tell stories in ways that they couldn't before, using social media and podcasts with more engagement with readers and the community. Local news organizations are increasingly collaborating with one another and with nonprofit organizations to share resources and produce more in-depth reporting. In all this shuffling of lost jobs, online transitions, shutting down, and building back up, I predict that there have been gaps in accountability. Before the pandemic, almost half of counties in the U.S. only had one local paper, and around 7% did not have any local paper. These areas are called news deserts. This is something important to fix. We've identified some of the aspects and problems that local newspapers struggle with, and now we'll get into things that can help. Most of the solution system thinking teaches is about changing the relationships within the system, and the most important places to change systems are by changing paradigms, otherwise known as mindsets, which are the perspectives that guide your work. You can change information flows, which is what information people have access to. You can change goals, which is basically the purpose of something. And you can change rules. This is changing the rules of the game, quote unquote. Let's start applying some of these concepts to journalism. Remember to keep your ears out for these ideas throughout the rest of the podcast. Information flows are about what information is collected, who sees it, and when they see it. Information influences people's actions. There are a few ways to improve this. You can write in your local paper. Write a letter to the editor, opinion piece, or commentary on a topic you care about for the paper to publish. You can find information on how to do this on the newspaper's website. There are rules that you have to follow, such as word count and topics that are relevant to the community. Keep in mind that these types of commentary are often noticed by government officials, so it's a really great opportunity to advocate on a topic you care about. You can also send news tips for stories reporters may be interested in. News tips are information that journalists may be interested in writing a story about or adding information to a story that they're currently writing. You might have seen notices online of journalists looking for people to give their input on a topic. This is a great opportunity for accountability on an issue you're affected by or see others affected by. Shady activity or serious problems that only you're aware of because of your expertise or profession. This could be environmental issues happening to a lake, something causing a systemic problem in government or working conditions, or something impacting your neighborhood. Let's be real. If you're alive in the U.S. today, you've probably seen some real messed up illegal stuff. Keep in mind that when a reporter is writing a story, they will need evidence to confirm events. Photos, documents, anything that shows what happened. Once stories get written and published, accountability happens when people read the stories. Following the news is an important piece of accountability, but the news can also leave you feeling depressed or angry without a clear understanding of what you can do with the information you've gained. Using systems thinking, you can change the goals of news as a way to make change. In systems thinking, goals are not always things that are stated. It's based on what people do, their actions. Journalists can change the goal from presenting information to actions that can be taken on the information. Articles could end with specific things you can do to solve the issue, whether that be contacting your local representatives, making changes in your own life and encouraging others to do the same, or collaborating with local organizations. This does happen occasionally. It's not widespread for a few reasons. There's a journalistic ethic of presenting information factually and with as little bias as possible. With current news, reporters often try to stay unbiased by providing information in a way that allows readers to come to their own conclusions on the reasons, instead of providing commentary themselves. When a reporter tells a story, the who, what, where, and when are easy to say, but the why is complicated. There's often many reasons why that can be traced from personal decisions to past legislation to even the weather. It's a butterfly effect, and what the most impactful cause of something is, or if even one cause has the most impact versus multiple things that have the same impact, is often left up to debate. bias comes out in which why the reporter chooses to share in the limited space they have to explain things. Organizations and journalists can change paradigms on their own by addressing bias and the reasons why by making decisions on bias beforehand. Is crime caused by sitting planning and or trauma? And how is compassion and accountability used? Are economic problems caused by the structure of capitalism or the mismanagement of capitalism? What types of protests are justified or unjustified, and how does this compare to the reason the protests are happening? Solutions tend to address the reasons why something happened, and sharing solutions with audiences can be difficult. Sometimes the way to solve an issue hasn't yet been discovered. Perfect solutions don't really exist, and the consequences of making a mistake are big. Telling someone they can volunteer or donate money to a nonprofit can be harmful if that organization is causing harm. Nonprofits function similarly to businesses, and many are a piece of this monster called the nonprofit industrial complex. There's a lot of aspects to it, and one of them is the fact that doing the right thing isn't always the thing that's profitable. As an example, an organization might say they are helping people when, you know, in reality they might be helping less people than they say they are, which leaves a lot of people in not good situations. There's a lot of times where the solution isn't popular, especially when it comes to things like civil rights. If journalists had the responsibility of providing solutions, discussing real solutions could be stifled in an effort to appeal to audiences. While many individual reporters do care a lot about making the world a better place, the organization they work for might not see that as a priority. Right now, something reporters could do to promote solutions when developing their stories is find locals with valuable input on the issue that affects them personally and ask them what potential solutions could help. This can be as easy as adding an extra question during an interview. Reporters can promote solutions by adding action items and community input to stories they already do. They can also promote solutions by changing the stories they write about. Here I introduce solutions journalism, another way to change the goal. In news reports, we usually see what's going wrong with the world. Solutions journalism is about what's going right. It's designed to inspire action and give readers a sense of hope and agency instead of leaving them feeling overwhelmed by problems. They do this in a few different ways. The story is about a response to a social problem, solutions that have been implemented, an invention that was made, a program that's been running, and on how that response has worked or why it hasn't. It gives insight and shows what can be learned about from a response and why it matters to the reader. It provides evidence and analyzes results that show whether solutions were effective or not. It shows solutions in context, even if that context shows the downsides and faults of the solution. Solutions journalism doesn't have breaking news or exposés because it focuses on solutions. It's limited to stories on problems that a solution was used. Unaddressed problems won't be shown. But a solution developed in one place can inspire solutions for other areas. Solutions journalism is also a great alternative for advocates. One of the downsides of advocacy is that you can't speak openly about the downsides of what you're advocating for. Only discussing the positives are important to convince people to get a solution implemented. You don't want to give people a reason to reject it. A solution that has a few downsides is much better than the severe consequences of never solving a problem. But it blocks the honest conversations required for that solution to be the most effective it can be. The Solutions Journalism Network was created to promote solutions journalism and supporting journalists who practice it. The organization provides training, resources, and support for journalists and media outlets around the world. On their website's menu, you can check out their Solution Story Tracker, which shows all the articles that have been submitted. You can find a variety of topics from racial equity to climate change. When I took a look, I saw solutions developed by scientists and nonprofits. One story was on biochar, a product made from wildfire management debris that can be used to restore soil. Another story was about a system to pay for education with a percentage of income for a certain number of years, with nothing owed after the last year or if you don't make income. If you're feeling particularly inspired, you can take a class on how to be a solutions journalist. You can check out their learning lab, where they have a lot of different classes. Some cover the basics, some discuss how to cover specific beats like healthcare or education, and some discuss different roles and mediums, such as teaching about it or broadcasting stories. Now we are going to discuss perspectives. News gives a very distorted perception of the world. Something my journalism professor taught me was that there are two types of stories, chocolate and broccoli. Chocolate stories are clickbait, entertaining stories about things that are controversial, absurdly rare, celebrity gossip, or doom-scrolling material. This distorts the perspective of the world as negative with dangers that aren't actually likely to happen. Broccoli stories are on important things, like feature stories on topics like social issues, environmental issues, and government policy. While important stories can definitely be interesting, it's thought of as broccoli because it may take a little more time and thought than clickbait. Journalists can get really frustrated when broccoli stories they want to report on aren't getting views. They often have to write a minimum amount of clickbait to get by. When you are reading news, you are voting on what types of stories get seen and what feature stories get written. We have the power to decide what types of stories get written. We have the power to shape the perspective journalism has on the world. If you avoid clickbait, you're changing the feedback loop. Next time you check out the news, take a moment and think before you click. Is it for entertainment? If it is, are there other ways you can be entertained outside of news? Also think about why you're looking at clickbait. I spend a lot of time thinking about the types of news and content I click on versus what I don't click on, to the point that I unconsciously avoid clickbait. But I have noticed that when I'm angry or sad, it takes a lot more effort to avoid a clickbait. I'd also like to point out that not all boring stories are important, and not all important stories are boring. Avoiding clickbait is like healthy eating. If all you eat is chocolate, and you decide one day to go cold turkey and only eat broccoli, that's not sustainable. And there are much better ways to eat broccoli than raw. It's easier to read stories on topics you already understand. You can work your way up to reading stories you are trying to learn about, such as obscure government policies or scientific topics. If people start to intentionally avoid clickbait, that will shape the perspective of the world. Now you know the perspective of what content is written, but the other perspective is in how content is written. We want to look at how to change the rules of the game and the perspective that guides it. We need to look at where it comes from. Systems thinking, rules are one of the most influential points. Systems are driven by rules and those who have the power to make them. Paradigms are perspectives, the mindsets that guide your actions. Many news organizations already have a generic paradigm and set of rules they go by. It's in a book that gets a new edition every other year called the Associated Press Stylebook, also called the AP Stylebook, and sometimes the Journalist's Bible. It's a guidebook that has information on the most up-to-date media laws, digital safety and privacy to protect journalists, as well as grammar, formatting, and journalistic principles. The AP Stylebook doesn't just guide journalists, it guides a significant portion of corporate and marketing communication, and that's a big deal in a capitalistic society. It's a guidebook created by the Associated Press, a nonprofit association for news outlets that collects news to distribute. In 2016, it was publishing and republishing material for more than 1,300 newspapers and broadcasters across 99 countries in English, Spanish, and Arabic. And the great news is, shifts have already been happening. In recent years, the AP Stylebook has taken awesome stances on using person-first language, respecting transgender people, and capitalizing the letter B in black. Just like news organizations can change their perspective on what they write, you can change your perspective on how you read. And here's the way you should. A lot of people don't think that staying up with current events is important. Here are some reasons it is important. Reading the news can strengthen your relationships. If your friend is stressed about something that happened to them in their community, like police brutality, responding by saying, "That's illegal," can be really invalidating when the legal system is broken, corruption is rampant, similar events happen all the time without any accountability, and there's nothing in place to prevent crimes from happening. If you understand events that are happening in your community, you'll understand their pain better. As a problem solver, understanding current events can help you identify problems in order to solve them. If you try to solve something looking down from a high place of positivity, you won't get far. There's even a name for it. It's called solutions privilege. It's where you can't understand solutions that don't fit your worldview. This can mean rejecting solutions that would actually solve a problem, or making solutions that are harmful or don't really go anywhere, because you can't solve a problem if you can't identify it. But reading the news is also stressful, so I'd like to give some perspectives that can reduce that. Mindfulness. We hear about it a lot as a mental health concept. It's kind of funny to talk about because it's somewhat of an abstract concept. It can mean a few different things. What I'd like to talk about today is mindfulness as not judging news stories with emotion, seeing something as positive or negative as a judgment. True mindfulness is like heavy-duty bench pressing for your brain. Most of us aren't there yet. Most days, I judge a lot of things as positive or negative, and when it comes to news, I shoot for not judging things as negatively and feeling happy about positive stories. But how on earth do you avoid negativity in the news? It seems like so much of it is terrible. And it's natural to feel that way, especially when it's worded that way, or if articles have a comment section and people have left some negative comments. But there's some ways to think about it. You might not have the full story. In the show Shameless, there's a character struggling with agoraphobia, and she's sitting in her house watching the news, absolutely terrified of the world. The show shows the true context behind these news stories through scenes with other characters. As an example, the news said there was a terrifying kidnapping, when what actually happened was there was a little girl who was feeling lonely, and she took a toddler to her house, and they played games together. Obviously, it's still kidnapping, and it wasn't as sinister as what the news showed or even knew about. That was a TV show. In real life, about 90% of kids are kidnapped by family members, and most of the time it's because of custody issues with divorced parents. Another perspective to have for news is that it's not sad, it's life. In reality and nature, there are things that are very beautiful. Love, kindness, fun, and play and cooperation are found in a lot of different species. In reality and news, there are also a lot of things that are painful. Death, illness, and suffering. Things like neglect, age, and change are something that really only exists because of physics. Things that fall apart and grow. We might feel sad because these stories feel unnatural, and certainly in some cases they are. Life is much more forgiving than a broken system. But all the news stories from COVID were part of life. Pandemics happen once every 100 years, and there will be another pandemic around 2120. NPR did a great example of explaining this, as well as explaining that we really got lucky with COVID. The death rates were way lower than other pandemic illnesses. Woohoo! We got lucky! Another perspective that can help is understanding that the story may be about something normal in another culture. It's not better or worse, it's different. You might think it's sad because you're comparing it to your culture. Because if someone in your culture was in that situation, it would show that they were in a bad situation. On the other hand, someone from that culture might think that your situation is sad, even though you don't see it that way. This might happen when reading a news story about a disability. For many people, having a disability is part of their identity, and it's not something they're sad about. You might mistake a news story about a nomadic person with a homeless person. They might look the same, but there's often a huge difference in the amount of personal resources and situational security. Reading a news story about abuse is stressful if you believe that the world is generally free from abuse. Interpreting news is easier if you know that abuse is normal and feel satisfied that the story is being given the attention it deserves. Bringing an injustice to light can be a validating experience for people who have been impacted, where awareness can help improve conditions through public support and legal justice. It's even better to be excited when a news story about something good that happened versus seeing good things as normal. As an example, you might read a story about terrible living conditions in a foreign country where there's violence, people don't have access to sewage systems, medical care, food, transportation, or other basic necessities. When you think about it, a lot of these problems are happening all over the world, including many areas of the US. Right now, if you see a story about a new public transportation system or city sewer development, you might glaze over it. But if you understand the context of why it's such an amazing thing, then you'll feel excited and happy that people are getting their needs met. If you look down on the world, you'll always find something to stress about. But if you look up at the world, you'll always find something to be happy about. But what would news look like if these attitudes were adopted? It would have two parts. The first would present bad news in the format of a rating site. When abuse is normal, all you need is a basic understanding of psychology and systemic issues to predict all the places abuse is happening. A map of influence would show every organization or group that has high to moderate impact on a community or even society, and each would have its own rating. These are global organizations with the biggest user bases, largest employers in a city, biggest influencers of media, ideological communities, whether that be academics, politics, religion, as well as city, state, and federal government departments. This is essentially anything that would qualify as a journalist beat if there was not a single news desert anywhere. This is a huge information map, so there'd be a page that sums up ratings for an overarching sector for quick scanning. Large organizations might be part of multiple sectors, and smaller organizations might only be a piece of a sector. Ratings of organizations would be categorized by sectors and subsectors. Sectors aren't just traditional economic industries based on money. An example is with social media, where attention can be its own currency. Subsectors describe specific niches, experience, or services within a sector. Each organization would have its own page within a sector. To identify areas that abuse could potentially happen, you need to describe all the relationships within the organization. An example for a business might be the public, clients, employees, employees with authority, and contractors. People could leave reviews regarding their personal experiences with the organization, and some journalists could moderate the reviews and make further contact to confirm the accuracy of the reviews. Reviews on review sites like Yelp and Glassdoor could also be shown. Journalists can make social media posts of ratings in collaboration with activists to highlight specific issues for the public to change. Each identified rating would have a link to a description of what would need to change for the rating to be resolved. For the ratings, you are essentially categorizing potential news stories, specifically the types of news stories that bring accountability. I'm going to give a quick description of types of abuse. The basic levels of abuse would be psychological misconduct. That would be emotional or narcissistic abuse, which would include things like manipulating the public, sexual, physical, medical, and financial misconduct as well. There'd also be death, neglect, discrimination, toxic attitudes. That would describe things like complacency and toxic work cultures. Other ratings would be anything that wasn't already covered. A sector-specific issues rating discusses things that only happen in this industry, as well as problems predicted based on lawsuits in other areas. There could also be labels for positive things as well. One example is a progressive policy ally, where groups and organizations can personally implement human rights-oriented rules that were not passed as laws because of corporate lobbying or refusal to improve conditions with legislation. I just described the main labels. Sublabels would describe specific events prioritized according to relevancy and ordered chronologically by estimated likelihood. There's a lot of sublabels out there, and repeating them all would be redundant. As an example, it's not very likely for over-medicating to happen in a large online community dedicated to arts and crafts, but something like copyright infringement could be a bigger issue there than at a hospital. If you imagine these ratings on a list going down to the side, there would be a rating that would show how frequent these issues might be happening. This list on the side would have one-time occurrences, infrequent occurrences, abuse or chronic occurrences, with likelihoods of low, moderate, high, and confirmed. This system would boost prevention by predicting where abuse is happening and linking to descriptions on how groups can change to improve conditions. This is important because the legal system functions on the basis of innocent until proven guilty. This legal protection is a right, and it doesn't leave room for prevention as an important measure of accountability. Many events that warrant class action lawsuits are never prosecuted, and even when they are, the damage it has caused can never be repaired. This system would promote accountability in news deserts. In areas that have news, it would fill in the gaps on issues journalists might not have time to write about, and point them to investigate stories that wouldn't otherwise have been discovered. As a news source on its own, ratings are equivalent to headlines. Reviews are equivalent to quotes, and solution descriptions move towards activism rather than journalism. So where's the story? Journalists would write articles about how problems were solved. When bad news is predictable, breaking news is good news. Imagine reading the news and feeling inspiration instead of dread. That's how to better represent the world. Because of all these topics, we need to rethink the systems of how we give and get information, accountability, and stay up with current events. What do you think? Leave a comment below of what you would change. And don't forget to support your local journalists in your area by checking out what news organizations there are, and if you can, signing up, subscribing, or donating. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Ben. Now for this month's quote of the month, it's coming this time from former NBA point guard for the Philadelphia 76ers, Allen Iverson, who I think had one of the most interesting careers in the NBA. The quote is, "You have to go through good times and bad times to get where you're trying to go." That's all for now. Make sure you follow us on social media for more on all that the Youth Tellers are doing. And we will see you in the next one.
All right, that's a wrap.
Thanks again for listening to Voice of Youth, your favorite digital media platform.
Make sure to follow us on all social media platforms at Youth Tellers.
And we will see you all in the next month.